All right. Welcome to Multimedia Security. Today, I will walk through a number of methods that are specific for the JPEG format. So image forensics methods that make use of the JPEG format. And the papers that I've selected, they are all from the group of Hani Farid. There are also other groups, like the group by Alessandro Piva. We had a look at a couple of their papers for the watermarking topic. they also did a lot on JPEG forensics, for example. There's also Chiwu Wang from China. So looking specifically into the JPEG format to detect manipulations in images has been a popular topic. First of all, how does the JPEG compression work? We already talked about this, but let's restate this. So the JPEG encoding roughly works like this. We have as input, we have a 3-channel RGB image. And the steps are convert RGB to another color space that is called YCBCR. So Y is the luminance, brightness, and CB is the blue chromaticity. CR is the red chromaticity. The idea is that once we have the luminance singled out or separated from the colors, we can apply compression of different strength. So we are a little bit more careful with the luminance because the eye is more sensitive to luminance changes. And we can apply a stronger compression on the blue and red color chromaticity. So green is missing because the green chromaticity is what is missing in order to add these values up to unity or to 255, depending on what your basis is. Okay. The second step is to subsample each channel. That's an optional step. Subsample each channel by a factor of 2, 3, 4. So these are the typical factors, and in principle you could do more. so this subsampling is typically done on the color channel also, arguing that we don't see these changes anyways, so much. And then third step is to subdivide the image into 8x8 blocks. Or the channels, sorry. into 8x8 pixel blocks. Then convert or shift the intensities from 0 to 255 to a domain that is minus 128 until 127. And then apply the discrete cosine transform. So up until now, we omitted most of these details and just said, okay, so the JPEG compression essentially boils down to a discrete cosine transform. And these frequency components are quantized then. Quantize DCT components. Higher frequencies. A larger quantization factor. Again, the idea is perceptual quality. So the eye is more sensitive to the low frequencies. In order to preserve the low frequencies better, we use a smaller quantization factor. This means the rounding error upon quantization is smaller and the image is more like original for the lower frequencies. For the higher frequencies, the eye is not so sensitive. So we can say we quantize by a larger factor. So we cut off, by rounding these terms, we cut off more information. The motivation from the coding or compression people was to aim for a compression scheme where many high frequencies are then quantized to zero. And because a sequence of zeros is particularly well suited for compression, no? Can just do a run length encoding for that. Or entropy encoding, sorry. So we quantize and then we perform an entropy encoding of the coefficients, so the quantized coefficients. Okay. All right, so this is the encoding, and the decoding is essentially going backwards through these steps. And we have two steps where we create some losses to the original image. One is the subsampling here, certainly. And the other one is, and more notably probably, is the quantization of the DCT coefficients here. Yeah. So we lose a little bit of information here, by quantizing the coefficients that cannot be restored. And so this is why JPEG images are comparably small. Yeah.
Does subsampling mean subsampling in pixel domain or in intensity domain?
Yeah, here we are still in, in, yeah. So instead of, what you would say typically is that you apply for the color channels, you subdivide the image into 16 by 16 blocks instead of 8 by 8 blocks. So you average 2 by 2 pixels, for example. No? So if this is an 8, these are 8 pixels, then these are 16 by 16 pixels. And we would say, okay, for luminance, we encode each of these 8x8 blocks, but for the red and blue chromaticities, we first compress this a little bit. So we make every 4 pixels 1 pixel, such that for CB it looks like a new virtual 8x8 block. And this is what we then pass on to the lower layers. Yeah. And for decompression, you write in the header that you subsampled CB and CR by a factor of 2, for example. So that means so you dequantize, invert your discrete cosine transform, and when you get here, then you take your 8x8 grid and replicate each pixel as often as what your subsampling factor is. And this certainly also saves a tremendous amount of space. Okay. Interestingly, the subsampling, I'm not really aware of methods that exploit this for forensic use, but there's a lot of potential in reading things out of these of this quantization step. So let me clarify what quantization of the DCT coefficients means. So what we get out here of the application of the discrete cosine transform. So the discrete cosine transform, I'm not sure whether I wrote down the equation, whether I have it here somewhere by coincidence. It's essentially, we wrote it down once. So I have it in my notes. So it essentially, what it does is it takes the input image, input intensity, and projects it onto cosines of different frequencies. Yeah, this can be done in 1D, or in the case of images, it's done in 2D because we have a 2D signal. Yeah, and so the DCT converts an 8x8 block in spatial domain. So the a grid of intensities as we are used to it into 8x8 coefficients in frequency domain. So each of these, and this is a lossless conversion, yeah? So each of these coefficients describes the strength of a frequency component. So if you remember, we looked at a picture from Wikipedia. So this is the so-called DC component. where we have like the zero frequency, and then we have a lot of AC components. That have gradients, for example, in horizontal direction, vertical direction, or combinations thereof, and can also be of varying frequency, like, for example, with two maxima, two minima, yeah, and then combinations thereof. Okay, and these sum up to a total of 64, and we have a one-to-one conversion. Okay, good. So, and the representation of the image is that we say we have a weighted sum of these basis functions to represent the image block. So, the quantization means that for each of these basis functions, we do have a quantization factor that is applied to the respective coefficient. So quantization is done via a quantization table. That for each frequency component contains a quantization factor. Okay. So this means if, for example, let's say the result of our discrete cosine transform is a coefficient Cij, so C is the coefficient in DCT domain, then we do not directly store that coefficient, but instead we divide it by the respective quantization factor Qij and round the result. Yeah, and let's not make too many assumptions whether we round. We can round up, we can round down, we can round at 0.5, up or down, doesn't really matter. Yeah. And the result here is an integer number. So C is the DCT coefficient. For frequencies I and J, so in horizontal and vertical direction. And Q is the quantization factor for these frequencies. Yeah. And so these calculations are designed to be simple because they are supposed also to run on embedded hardware and so on and so on. Yeah. Let me show you such a table really quickly. So here's just an example. It's not from one of the papers that I've put in Stuttgart, but one of the versions before, like an earlier paper of one of the papers that I put on Stuttgart. So it's digital image ballistics from JPEG quantization, a technical report. And here's just an example quantization matrix. Yeah. How to read it? So the first quantization matrix is for the luminance component, the Y, and the other two matrices are for the blue and red chromaticities. And and these integer numbers here, these are the quantization factors. So these are the values that we need to plug in into this equation here, the Qs. Yeah? So this is Q00, Q01, and so on and so on. Yeah. we see already if we divide by one, we're relatively good. Yeah, we're not throwing away much information, except of the fact that we're still doing a discrete cosine transform, so we're still projecting it onto cosines. So the rounding operation here is still in effect, yeah, because we don't, it's unlikely that we get an integer number out, even though we quantize by a factor of one, yeah. So we are always cutting a little bit off. And the ordering is like, this is the DC component, so the zero frequency, yeah. And then, with increasing horizontal direction, the horizontal frequencies are growing. And with increasing, like, vertical direction, the vertical frequencies are growing. Yeah. And we see, like, the higher the frequencies become, the larger also the quantization factors become. Yeah. So this means, for example, the highest vertical frequency here is divided by a factor of 12. Meaning that if we divide by 12 and round the result, then our rounding error has a bigger impact than if we divide by one. Yeah, I think that's certainly. So let's make sure that we got that. So if we have any number here, let's say 16.3 or so, whatever came out of our cosine, yeah. If we divide by one, the error that we make, the mistake that we make are these 0.3, yeah, after rounding. If we divide by 12, okay, then we cut off 4.3, for example. No? So loosely speaking, the larger the quantization factor, the larger also our quantization error will be. Okay, and what we can see here is that for the chromaticities, so the colors, stronger compression factors are applied. So the tens start much earlier here than for the luminance component. That's a typical observation, because our eyes are not so sensitive to color, are more sensitive to luminance changes. Okay. Now the interesting thing is, The interesting thing is that this processing chain is described in the JPEG standard, but there are also a couple of degrees of freedom that everyone can implement any way he or she likes. Yeah. The first thing is it's written in the JPEG standard that there must be, it's like the quantization table stored within the file. Yeah. And they also make a recommendation, like a quantization table could, for example, look like this. But if a vendor wants to deviate from that, then he or she can just do it because the quantization table is stored in the file anyways. So someone reading the file can first read the quantization table or first reads the quantization table and then applies it to dequantize the data and go backward in the pipeline. It's no problem. Yeah. So you can read the image as soon as you have the quantization table. So quantization table is not part of the standard. It just has to be provided with the file. And for example, the rounding operation here is also not part of the standard. Yeah. It can be a ceiling operation, a floor operation, a round operation. And also the choice of the subsampling here is a parameter or a factor that is just stored in the file. Yeah. So someone reading the file can decide for the subsampling factor, but any vendor can choose it any way that he or she likes. Yeah. Right, and the last thing I wanted to say, and it turns out that also what makes a big difference in devices performing JPEG compression is the implementation of the discrete cosine transform. Yeah, because if we open a textbook, implement the discrete cosine transform, then we have a double sum of cosines. I guess we should just write it down. No? We have a double sum of cosines and a couple of divisions and so on. And that's an expensive operation on embedded hardware. So there are a lot of papers, mainly from people working in Codex, that do integer approximations, for example, for discrete cosine transforms. So, so we can assume that from the original image to the frequency transform, also weird things happen just because the practical implementations are actually just approximations of a DCT transform and not 100% mathematically correct discrete cosine transform. Okay, so what is the, from a forensic perspective, what is the potential here? There are a lot of opportunities. So first of all, it's just an important thing because JPEG is such a widespread format. But one immediate possible application is that we say, okay, if someone sends a JPEG image to us, we can make a guess from which camera model that JPEG image comes by looking at the quantization table. Yeah, because many vendors use their own quantization tables. Also, Photoshop, for example, uses its own quantization tables. So Adobe, essentially. I need space. kill it. It's okay. So, opportunities for forensic exploitation. So, application one is determine, or at least maybe it's fairer to say guess. Guess a camera make and or model from clustering of quantization matrices. So the first paper that I've uploaded, so which is essentially the follow-up paper on the one with that quantization matrix that I've showed, studies this a little bit. So let me show it to you really quickly. It's a super simple read because it's so short. It's not a very complicated technical content. It just says digital image ballistics from JPEG quantization, a follow-up study. It's essentially like the same description here, like for the main study. So what does it say? Okay. We downloaded 1 million images from Flickr. And had to remove like 500,000 because it looked as if these pictures came from some photo editing software. So this means that we still had 440,000 pictures. So why from Flickr? Flickr provides an application programming interface that can automatically download stuff. And Flickr provides the images in their uploaded original also. So it didn't recompress them or apply changes. If you like to get the originals, you can have that. And that is why Flickr is always an interesting source for studies of this type. Yeah. So anyways, okay, we have 440,000 JPEG images from Flickr. And of course, you have tags like, okay, all these images are from the same author or so, something like this, or from the same user uploaded. No, that's what you know. Now the images have tags. So some users tag the images. It's a photo community. Yeah. So some users tag the images with, oh, this was my camera A or this was my camera B or so. And and they took this data set as a basis. Hold on, what did they, how did they? Okay, they further reduced the data set. So they didn't look at individual images. They wanted to have at least 5 or more images having the same paired make model resolution and quantization table. So that left them with 330,000 images. And the remaining 330,000 images span 10,000 different distinct pairings of camera make, model, resolution, and quantization table, accounting for 48 different camera manufacturers, 859 different camera models. Okay, you see, it's just a huge table of stuff. And then they were putting putting these matrices in VIMS. Yeah. And they say, okay, they have a total of, like, they have a total with a total of 10,000 entries with these, like, that are specific for a camera. And then saying, okay, out of these 10,000 entries, 2,700 entries, so roughly a quarter, have a unique paired resolution and quantization table. And 37% have at most two matches, 44% have at most three matches. So that's pretty good. It's really narrowing down the space of source cameras. If you can assume that you get, like, you get an image directly from one camera in your scenario. Yeah, and then there's a huge appendix. So it's actually, it's a 28-page paper, and we are on page 2. So we're at the end of this paper. And then there's a huge appendix. Each entry in the first table corresponds to a camera with unique resolution and quantization table. Each entry in the second table corresponds to an equivalence class of identical resolution and quantization table. The size of the equivalence class is in the first column. Camera, make, and model, and resolution are in the second column. And then it's just listing cameras. It's really nice. Yeah? I mean, typically you have that in a database. That was a technical report. It was not a paper presented at a conference, but it was a study that they did at their lab. And essentially they put the results on a web page. So that is what a technical report is. Yeah. So nowadays people put technical reports on a web page called Archive, but that's like 10 years old approximately. Pretty exactly. It's from 2008. So at that time you just put it on your personal web page and people can look at it if they like. Hmm? Okay. So that is one direct use. Yeah, you can build a large database from images that you scrape from different cameras, and then if someone claims, oh, this is an image that has been directly copied from my camera, you can ask him, oh, what camera do you have, and so on, and he's gonna tell you, and then you can check, does it match your database entries, for example, no? Or you look, or what you can see, since we said, for example, Photoshop brings its own quantization matrix, yeah, you can just check, okay, did he really directly copy it from his camera, or did it go through Photoshop or something, for example, yeah? Or the GIMP also would very likely have a different quantization table. GIMP, I think, is linked against libjpg. They use the table that is recommended in the JPEG standard. But since we have so many different pairs of tables and resolutions there, it's not gonna hit it, no? By coincidence. Okay. Good. Yeah, and Hani, he's also operating a web page. Is it true? where you can upload an image from a camera, and if the quantization table matches, you get like a label, your image is true. But at the same time, this helps Hani to keep his database growing because he gets a lot of camera originals uploaded then, also from newer cameras. Okay. Good. That is one thing. The other thing is that. But that's a little bit more complicated. That we say, okay, if we assume that, let's, for the sake of simplicity, let's just assume every program and every camera and so on has a unique quantization table, yeah, without caring too much about these two in one bin or so cases, no? Then this effectively means that every time that an image is stored, like saved in the JPEG format at a different device or in a different program, then a different quantization table is applied to the data. Yeah? And this leads a little bit to the detection of double JPEG compression. Yeah? Because if we apply for the first saving on the digital camera, for example, one quantization table, and then copy the image to the computer, load it in Photoshop, save it again, apply a different quantization table, then that means that the individual coefficients Cij are once quantized with a factor Q1, let's say, and a second time quantized with a factor Q2. And turns out that this double quantization introduces a statistical trace and can be detected. So, so the second opportunity is to detect disturbances in the JPEG artifacts. Most notably, or maybe most researched or so, are two specific cases. So double JPEG compression. Or direct, like, disturbances in the JPEG grid. So this, one could say this is twice the same thing, but not quite so. So when we speak of double JPEG compression, then what we are looking at, or what we are specifically interested in, is there a previous quantization table . What are the entries? So it's a little bit about like archaeology. So we are digging in statistical artifacts, trying to reconstruct a quantization table that we can only observe indirectly by looking at some quantization steps that are preserved in the data even after applying another JPEG compression on top. We talk about this in a minute. And direct disturbances in the JPEG grid, it essentially is more like a statistical descriptor. I say, okay, if I have a quantization matrix like this, my data looks like this, then I cannot really explain some statistical deviations in some part of the image of that grid. Yeah. So look for manipulations has deviations from expected JPEG artifacts. Okay, depending on how much time we have, we will look at more or less of these cases. So let's first talk about double JPEG compression, because I think it's really the most relevant and most actively researched topic. So, detection of double JPEG compression. And we will not have the time to talk about estimating the primary quantization matrix. So let me specifically say, without estimating primary quantization matrix.
But it is possible.
Yes. If you like to know how this works, we can do it in 2 weeks. But time certainly does not suffice today. Yeah, but it's an estimate. I mean, let's get the situation straight. Yeah. So the JPEG file looks like this. We have the header. The header contains the quantization matrix Q of the last compression. So if we talk about double compression, we would say it's Q2. Like, because Q1 is the unknown first compression, maybe in the digital camera, and Q2 is a Photoshop matrix, let's say. Yeah. So the quantization matrix Q2 is in the header. And then we have here our entropy encoded, DCT of Y, and then DCT of CB and DCT of C red. Yeah. Okay. And now, what we can do is that we say, okay, let's pick, for example, the luminosity component, because it is oftentimes less affected by other things like this subsampling or so. Yeah. So let's take the luminosity component and analyze this a little bit more. Yeah. So let's say luminosity component Y. What happens In the case of double compression, with Q1 first and then Q2. So, the quantized coefficient let's say yij, so this is the quantized coefficient or double quantized, sorry, okay. So we say we take the original coefficient Cij, so that's the same Cij that we just had further up, yeah? Cij, first we quantize it with some quantization factor Q1, yeah? So we have a Q1ij and round it in a way. Let's say for the sake of simplicity that we round, like we floor. So let's assume floor operators, but this is really totally arbitrary. It doesn't change anything. It's just going to make the numerical example a little bit easier in a minute. Yeah. So let's assume floor operators internally in the compressor. Yeah. Implemented. Good. So we store that image. So this is the coefficient as it is stored in the digital camera. Yeah. And now we load it, like we copy the picture to the computer and first of all, open it. Yeah, we look at it. So what does that mean? That means that we read the primary quantization table that is in there and we multiply this coefficient by its quantization factor and display the image. No? So the fact that we rounded here means, okay, we lost a little bit, but it's perceptually, it's not disturbing, so no problem. Yeah? Okay, then maybe we adjust the contrast in the image or so a little bit, or we don't do anything. Yeah, we save it again. And this time, Photoshop, for example, uses its quantization matrix. So a quantization matrix Q2, which divides that product, but I'm running out of space. So let's say we just divide the Q1 here. It's mathematically equivalent. And we round again. Yeah. Again, for the sake of simplicity, let's say we floor again, but it really doesn't make any difference. So it's an arbitrary choice, yeah, without loss of generality. Okay, and that is now the double quantized coefficient that is stored in the image. Yeah, so we have two rounding operations underway. So rounding one, then the restoration, then we quantize again and round again. Yeah, and if we now look at the distribution of these coefficients, yij, then we can detect characteristic traces that come from this rounding error. So if we look at the statistical distribution of Coefficients yij from many 8x8 blocks in the image. Characteristic traces can be found. Okay, we can do a numerical example that clarifies or that immediately shows what can be found. Sorry? So, proof by example. Questions? Or do you have a question?
No.
Okay. So we make an example. Forgot which order was more. We do both. Okay. So let's say Q1 ij, so one of the quantization, like one of the entries in the quantization table of the primary quantization table equals 2. And one of the entries in the second quantization table equals 3. And then let's say our input Cij okay, so we choose different values for Cij here and then this table is not pretty. The CI, do you have space up there? I don't, unfortunately. Because the CIJ should go up there, ideally. And then we have the resulting YIJ here. Okay. So what is happening? So let's run through a number of values for Cij. Yeah, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11,
So
that's supposed to be.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, we can argue this now. What's most interesting is so let's say this is just cache. Yeah, you know, I'm not really interested in this. I'm just interested in that, but I'm not 100% confident that I can do the jump right away into the fourth row. Okay, let's see. So we have one, yeah? We say we floor, so we made it easy already. So 1 divided by 2 is 0, perfect. So So here we have a one, yeah. We say Q1 equals 2. So we divide 1 by 2, we floor, it's 0.5, we floor, it's 0. Then we do the decompression. So we multiply by 2 again. Maybe this is what we like to store here. But 0 times 2 is still 0, yeah? And then we quantize by a factor of 3. Okay, that's 0, yeah? Okay. Now, and okay, and the 0, okay, maybe we only need one row here, one auxiliary row. Okay. Anyways, the final coefficient here is a 0. Good. Like we have input 2. 2 divided by 2 equals 1. I can say, okay, let's say 1. We multiply by 2. That becomes a 2. We divide by 3. That's also a 0. 3 divided by 2 equals 1. 2, 0. So 4. 4 divided by 2 equals 2. Times 2 equals 4. Divided by 3 equals 1. 5 divided by 2 equals 2. Times 2 equals 4. This divided by 3 equals 1. 6 divided by 2 equals 3. Multiplied by 2 again equals 6. Quantized by 3 equals 2. 7 by 2 equals 3. Multiplied by 2 equals, 6 equals 2. 8 divided by 2 equals 4. Times 2 equals 8. 8 divided by 3 equals 2. 9 divided by 2 equals 4. This is, again, 8 divided by 3 equals 2. 10 divided by 2 equals 5. This is 10. 5 times 2 is 10. And 10 divided by 3 equals 3. So 11 is also 5, 10, 3. 12 is 6, 12, 4. Okay. we could see it already, but let's add a couple of columns. 13, 14, 15, 16. Okay, 13 by 2 is 6, 12, 4, 14 by 2 is 7, that's 14, divided by 3 is 4, 15 is 7, 14, 4, 16 equals 8, 16, 5. Yeah. There's a pattern in here. But the nicer pattern is when these values are swapped. So let's do the other way around the case. I leave it here. We can look at it in a minute. So let's look at the second case. Thank you. So again, let's say we have input values Cij. And then we say Q1 equals 3. And Q2 equals 2. And what we observe, of course, is Yij at the end of the day. So, good. So Cij, we have values 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Maybe that suffices already. So we divide. Yeah, okay. Okay, if we divide 1 by 3, that's a 0. We multiply it by 3 again. Okay, that's boring. Yeah, okay. So 0, 0, 0, 0. Also, if we have a 2 divided by 3, that will also be a 0. So these are zeros. If we have a 3 divided by 3, that's a 1. And restored, it will also be a 3. And divided by 2, that will be a 1. If we have a 4, 4 divided by 3 is 1, restored to a 3, that becomes a 1. If we have a 5, 5 divided by 3 is 1, restored to 3 divided by 2 equals 1. Now we have a 6. 6 divided by 3 is 2, restored to 6, and this becomes a 3. 7, same thing, it becomes a 2, becomes a 6, becomes a 3. 8 divided by 3 is also 2, becomes restored a 6, this is also a 3. Now for 9, if we divide 9 by 3, we have a 3, this becomes a 9. 9 divided by 2 is a 4. 10 is also 3, 9, 4. 11 is 3, 9, 4. 12 is a 4. Times 3 is 12 again. 12 divided by 2 is a 6. 13 is also 4, 12, 6. 14 is 4, 12, 6. 15 is 5. 15 and 7, and also 16, yeah, and so on and so on. All right, lots of tables. At the end of the day, we only observe the y's, yeah? So that is what we have to operate with. And the remaining stuff, these are just hypotheses that we make. We say, oh, if it's twice compressed, shouldn't it be then the case? We have the original sensory readout. We do the first compression, we copy the image, do the second compression, and then we see the Y. So we only see the Y. So what is weird here? Or weird, what is the result?
The lower part, I use the tools on the first.
Yes, that's the nice thing in the lower part. It really jumps to the eye that there are no tools. No? Where are the tools? They are just gone. And there's also no five. No? And if we continue this, we're going to see there's also now 8. And there will also be now 11. So apparently there are some. So some values will not occur. Like no matter what input we make, they will not occur. We will never dequantize something that becomes a 2, for example. Yeah? So why is that? We will never have a quantized value that is a 2. Yeah? But if we look at the quantization table Q2 that we have in our JPEG header, I mean, if there's a 2 entered, it's pretty clear, okay, we could easily have a quantized value of 2. We just would need a 4 as input. Yeah. The thing is, we never get a 4 here, or a 5 as input. 5 as input would also be fine. But we also never have a 5 here as input. Yeah. And that is why, like, there's no input that can create as a 2 in the output. Yeah. And it turns out, like, for these combinations of values, it's at every third step that we don't, like, we have no way of creating that number from our input values. Yeah. And there's a similar, but a little bit, or essentially the same, but a little bit shifted pattern here. Yeah.
Yeah. Some numbers are more often.
Yes. Yes. We have an imbalance here. So here we have 4 twos, but we only have 2 threes. And then we have 4 fours, 2 fives. Yeah, right. No? Okay, and we have a little bit of an irregularity here with our zeros, but let's say that's the start of the series, so it doesn't count. Yeah? So here we have 2, 4, 2, 4. Yeah? Okay. So what does that mean? That means if we create a histogram of these coefficients, so let's say we pick a coefficient somewhere from this middle frequency range, yeah? But we can also check multiple coefficients. No one is keeping us away from that, preventing us from that. So let's say we pick a specific frequency band ij, and we collect entries from 100 of these JPEG blocks, maybe a neighborhood of these JPEG blocks, yeah? And we create a histogram of these values. Then a typical double compression artifact is that this histogram is not smooth, but it has a strong high frequency component, either because there are missing values every now and then, or because, well, there are not exactly values missing, but we still have an imbalance in our distribution. Yeah. Like we have twice as many bins feeding one histogram bin, or twice as many inputs feeding one histogram bin as the neighboring histogram bin. Yeah. So the resulting histograms look a little bit odd, and in order to quantify this, we can perform a frequency transform. And if suddenly a high frequency somewhere where nothing's going on anymore in your spectrum, but if suddenly a high frequency shows up, then it's a typical double compression artifact. Yeah, let me write this down. So, if we have a nested nested quantization steps, quantization and dequantization. Steps. Then the histograms, so the histogram histograms of quantized coefficients. Shows unnatural, whatever that means, we have to define this in a way, unnatural high frequencies. Because if Q1 is larger than Q2, some bins are just empty. If Q2 is larger than Q1, some bins have have many more, twice as many was because of our choice of numbers, have many more occurrences or many more values than others. So therefore, a simple detector pick a few frequency bands IJ pick a number of JPEG blocks and create a histogram of the quantized coefficients YIJ. So every block contributes one of these coefficients. And third step, perform FFT or a Fourier transform on that histogram if a high frequency suddenly shows, you can say, okay, this is a double compression. No? So maybe in order to imagine this a little bit better, what do these histograms look like if Or do I have a picture here? Oh yeah. Ah, here's a picture. This is a little bit hidden in a paper called Statistical Tools for Digital Forensics. I put it on Studon. In that paper, there's also a note on resampling. It was published prior to that journal article that we looked at. Don't be irritated, just skip, skip, skip. And then they talk about double JPEG compression and they essentially state what we went through. And here are some example histograms to illustrate this. Okay, I guess I give up in a second. Ah, no, here we have it. So good. So here's an example for empty bins, no? And I think looking at that picture, it's intuitively clear if we Fourier transform this, then we will have some action suddenly at this in the spectrum at a pretty high frequency. And also here, I mean, although there are no peaks, it's like really empty, no? But still we have such a comp-like structure here, that also this will show in the high frequency component. Okay. A few remarks. So there are combinations of quantization coefficients where this doesn't work. Yeah. And specifically, if Q2, for example, is a multiple of Q1, nothing happens, just nothing. Yeah. or, I mean, if they are identical, also nothing happens. Yeah. So that is a practical explanation why you will want to check for multiple coefficients. No. And also, I mean, yeah, this is sort of an idealized model. Yeah, you never know what exactly is going on in the second compression step. Maybe they mess some other things up such that our nice model equation doesn't exactly hold anymore. Yeah. So in practice, what you like to do is check multiple coefficients. If you find something nice, if you don't, okay. No. And it's an approach that is not very localized. No, you need, in order to get a histogram like this or so, you need a certain number of blocks. No, so it's a great approach to apply it, for example, on the whole image. Then you have great statistics. No, or on relatively large areas. So why might it be interesting to check for double compression locally? You can think of a scenario where someone takes an image from a digital camera, opens it in Photoshop, and paints, let's say, the right half of the image new, completely new, and stores it again in the JPEG format. Now, if we look at this image, if you look at the left half of the image, it looks like a perfectly double compressed JPEG image, because that's what it is. If we look at the right half of the image, it looks as if it would have been compressed only once, because we were painting there like crazy and and removed the traces of the primary JPEG compression. Yeah, and that is, so that's the reason why it's also interesting to locally look for traces of single, double, whatever JPEG compression in images. Good. When you check Studon, you'll notice there are two more papers, but I didn't have the time today to talk about them. And you can look at them if you like, but I guess I have to. I mean, next week I'm out of town, and then we have just one more meeting. I think I just have to think about whether I find them important enough to do them next time, or to talk about physics-based methods, what I originally planned to do in the last week. I mean, if you like to continue on this JPEG stuff, we can certainly do it. It's not a problem. There's enough material, a lot of papers on this. Yeah. So, okay. Good. So that's from my side. Any questions?
Yes, in the signal effector, the first step, why to pick a few frequency bands? This is for the image, right?
Yeah. Okay, so this is supposed to be like a loop, yeah? Of course, you only need one frequency band at a time, yeah? Okay, yes. Pick one, okay, yeah? Okay. If you don't find anything, maybe pick a second one. and iterate, yeah? I did not really experiment in any way which frequency bands are better suited than others. I would expect some middle frequencies are probably quite good, but yeah, I also don't know.
Basically, just to have the IJ.
Right. Pick a few, check, and then if you don't find anything, say okay, it can pass. Yeah.
Will there be class next week?
Exercises? Lecture? No lecture next week.
Lecture.
Yeah, sorry. I'm traveling next week, and I'm also traveling this week. So I'm.
Yeah.
So no exercise this week, and no lecture next week. And then there will be an exercise on Thursday next week. That is February 1st, and a lecture. And an exercise in the week after that. Ah, okay. And any other organizatorial things? If you need an exam date or something, you can also talk about this now. All right, so remaining schedule. Exercise on February 1st. Then we have lecture on February 5th, I guess. Should be a Monday. And then we have exercise on February 8th, and that's it. Okay, good. All right, thank you.